Hey there, Pounders. It's JRW and Seema bringing you another episode of A Fifth of Spurs. And today we also have joining us Josh Geyer, a.k.a. Completely Deck. Seema, Josh, how you guys doing?
Good.
Yep, good. Thanks.
That's it? That's all you're giving me? You give me good.
I told you earlier, this the third fifth of Spur, is it feels a little bit like the third Godfather, where you start it because you have to, and you just get all the way through it because you have to, but you just, the first two were your money shots, and this one, it's more obligatory than anything. So
I suppose this would be the perfect time for me to bring one of my daughters in as a complete miscast, as, like, say, the resident Spurs stats expert. And just have her just, you know, blah, 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 blah. That would be
yeah.
Cool.
My wife online is also played by my real wife, strangely. No, it's yeah, we're here and we're excited, and you know, it's not exciting as the third fifth of Spur, because as you and I had talked about, if you break it down in the fifth concept, our third fifth of the season was by far our least successful.
Well, let's go ahead and define our terms first of all, just because the 82 games break so nicely up into fifths.
Yeah.
We have this particular third fifth of the season, of the regular season, began with the 9:36 left in the fourth quarter of the game against the Oklahoma City Thunder January the 1st, and it extended all the way through into the majority of the first period, the first quarter, with 2:24 left of the first into game 50 against the Kings on the 4th of February. So just so that everybody knows the rules of the game, we can discuss anything that has happened so far, even extending all the way back into the first game or the preseason, but we can't go beyond 2:24 left in the first against the Kings on the 4th of February.
Which is good, actually. This fifth, that's a good thing.
Yeah, just the fact that we have everything divided up into five pieces, because five is such a wonderful number, as everyone knows. It actually kind of works out as far as the season is concerned, just from kind of expectation standpoint, don't you think?
It does. There, you really can make the argument that there are five stages to the season. The first being really early success, coming out of the gate strong, having the offense really reigning, you know, us playing more of a run-and-gun style, and then moving into the second stage.
Yeah, well, the second stage, absolutely. The offense hiccuped a little bit more. The defense started exerting itself, and then moving into the third stage, where we had our first back-to-back losses against the Knicks and the Celtics, and then moving into the rodeo road trip where we are now.
Right, which, and I'll bring up a side question here. You know, we always have talked about this is the time in which we gel, and that's kind of the third stage of the year is the rodeo road trip, the time in which we all come together, the team builds a camaraderie, they start to play a little bit better. You know, I know we really can't even get too much into the rodeo road trip just because of the nature of, you know, JRW's fifth of Spur, but I don't
know. It's ours.
It's ours, of course. Yeah, I'll own the third Godfather here. I don't know that I, and I don't want to say we're gelling worse, but I guess it's a testament to how well we had gelled and how good the camaraderie of this team was entering the rodeo road trip that I can sit here right now and say, I don't think that we're tremendously better, do you?
No, I don't. And the last game before they went on the rodeo road trip, in the pregame with Pop, one of the reporters asked him about bonding. Going into the yes, you can imagine. Pop immediately kind of rolled his eye. Actually, he didn't roll his eyes at that point. He just kind of looks at him and says, No, I never talk about bonding. Someone might have asked me a question about bonding, and because I answered the question about bonding, everybody wrote about bonding instead of writing about defense. But no, I can't say that we ever bonded, you know, anymore, or actually looked to bond at that point. And everyone kind of just sat there for a second, and then that's when I piped up and said, so, do you have any special bonding exercises for the guys on the rodeo road trip? And He laughed for a while before he said, no, there's no extra bonding exercises. We're pretty much bonded already by this point, I think.
That's right. Well, I can see that,
absolutely, that there really isn't that much more that the team needs to know each other. Antonio just seems like he's been a Spur forever.
Yeah, he should have been. Yep. But, you know, it's like every previous year we've had a rodeo road trip. I can definitively remember one or two games from that point forward within that road trip in which I said, oh, okay, they're starting to really come together. It's almost as though Manu knows exactly when Tony's going to make a cut, or Timmy knows exactly where RJ is going to be on the corner at what moment. And you can almost isolate exactly what second or what game that happened. This year, it feels a little bit different in that all of that was going on before the road trip.
Yeah, I think I remember I can isolate the first moment I saw that happening in, like, game one.
Yeah, I was going to say that was October, I believe. Yeah. We thought that
27th, something around the 27th, I think there was a 13-point victory on around about that time.
Right. Yeah. Well, and getting back to our five stages, the fourth stage of the season, obviously the next one, the next run that we have, I guess, awaiting us is what we would call our stretch run, mm-hmm. where we really get the dynamos kind of primed, we get the big three kind of in shape, we get everybody on the same page and get everything flowing and working dynamically together, and then moving straight into stage number five, the playoffs.
Yeah, let's not predict anything about stage five at this point.
Absolutely not. I'm going to predict that we're going to get to the playoffs.
Okay,
but
you're going out on a limb there.
I don't think that it's anti-mojo to say that, but I do think it would be to go, you know, deeper into.
We're not
that
even
going to
talk about what would happen, or what we would rather not talk about at all. At this point, I'm cutting you off. This is me cutting you off.
What are we talking about?
We are talking about the stages of the season, and we're skipping the fifth stage because that's what we do.
That's exactly right. Yeah, see, Josh is already on board. He knows exactly what's happening.
He does.
He's, like, he's Michael. He's Corleone. He's Michael Corleone in this episode.
Well, I mean, come on. If you're a Spurs fan, you're used to Pop's mentality of be with the game or just, you know, be on the sideline. So.
Well, and speaking of being with the games, I'm sure Pop has not been happy about the giveaways or the stolen games that we have so far on this year. Spurs fan in Rome made a comment after the Pacers game in this fifth of Spur. He talked about how that specific game reminded him of Spurs teams of 4 years ago, about how they played physical, Manu carried him in the fourth, always seeming to have his best performances on the road. And then other teams maybe wouldn't have fought back on the road once down by double digits as we had. Relating that to the Pacers, talking about how they were a young team and that worked in the Spurs' advantage, he ended his comment saying that the Spurs stole that game on the road, which I kind of would agree with him. We've been pretty fortunate this year to steal quite a few games. How many stolen games is that for us now on the year? Anybody out there maybe counting? I know Ayatollah responded with, you know, that we stole two games in Minnesota, or we're against Minnesota. We had a Milwaukee game, the Denver game. You know, you can make an argument there with Manu's taking of Carmelo's charge. Grizzlies, Thunders, Bulls.
Two Timberwolves games. It's probably close to a dozen at this point, wouldn't you say?
I would think so. And you know, you and I were talking a little bit before we did the podcast. I don't know that it's any more or less than we ever have at this point in time before. I just remember last year, it seems like we had a lot of games that we could have stolen that the ball just didn't bounce our way. I mean, I hate to say it's a luck issue or it's a you know, a good luck or bad luck, but I feel this year those bounces are going the Spurs' way.
You know, yeah, you can say that we've stolen a good dozen games this year, but on the other side, you can say that there's no such thing as a stolen game. Your record is your record. You win what you win. I mean, if you're really going to describe this year's team, it's a veteran team. It's a team with the requisite been there, done that, and swagger, carriage, charisma, you know, whichever word you want to use. But you also have enough young talent to rest your best, your older guys, for the second half, the second half of the second season, the postseason. It's a team who believes in themselves, a team that believes that they will win the game they're in. It's a different feeling than feeling like you win every game. It's a very in the moment, in the now I believe we can win this game, even if they're down double digits. And they can they believe they can win those games if only they just keep trying, stay patient, and are ready when the opportunity, you know, when the game presents itself to be won. And this is something that I've always felt from as long back as I can remember just watching sports with my dad growing up, the concept that at times, sometimes multiple times in a game, but at times in a contest, the game offers itself to be won, where the game hangs in the balance. Sometimes games hang in the balance when teams are playing neck and neck, and other times it's, you know, like 4 or 5 minutes left in a game when you're down by 8 or 12, and you just know the run begins now, or it's not going right to happen. And right, every single time that, you know, in all of these games, not every single time, obviously, with the team of having lost some, but nearly every time that moment comes in that game is on that seesaw, they just know when to step on it and push the balance over to their side. It's awesome to watch.
Well, I think it's remarkable to watch when you really consider, you know, like you said, and I would agree with you. I kind of play devil's advocate, but I would agree with you that the good teams basically create your own luck. And, you know, your record is what it is. But when you watch this team, you really get the feeling. You don't, I guess, from a fan's perspective, as an outsider, as an objective fan, if I take myself out of the Spur bubble, you almost can watch the Spurs play and think, oh, they're beatable. You can definitely beat that team. And I think David Lee actually said it best after the Golden State game on the 24th of January. He said, they're a very frustrating team to play. I don't go out there feeling like they're a better team than us. When you play the Lakers, you look at their size and you say it's going to be a tough game. I feel like we match up well with the Spurs. I feel like they're a beatable team, especially in this building. And just the way they execute and the way they take advantage of any little mistake you make, it's like a boring way to play, but it's so effective. End quote. And I think that hits the nail on the head, because if you're a player and you watch the Spurs, you kind of get lulled into believing that. You know, Kenny Smith said a couple of weeks back, he said the Spurs dare you to take dumb shots. They force you to make mistakes. And they almost treat you as though you're stupid, as though you're going to make mistakes, and that's how they succeed. You know, when I hear Lee say that, I'm encouraged, because we don't have that outright dominance that says, you know, you beat Kobe, you beat the Lakers. Done. I mean, it's pretty simple. You shut Dirk down, you shut the Mavs down.
When I hear that quote from Lee, I think he's revealing more about his expectations concerning playing the game, and it's less than it is what he's actually making a judgment on the Spurs. He's talking about the way he looks at his opponent, and what he sees when he evaluates the Lakers is, dude, they're tall. We'll have problems beating them. And when
he looks at it, it's simple.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's revealing his own thought process, right?
Right.
So let's just take him at face value. When you play the Lakers, you look at their size and say it's going to be a tough game.
Mm-hmm.
All right. When he looks at the Spurs, he says, "Well, we should be able to take them if all goes well." The problem is, Spurs are not a team that can be evaluated by your eyeball test.
Right. That's the point I was trying to make too. Is that it's far more difficult to game plan against a team like San Antonio, because there's so many different weapons that can beat you. I mean, how many games do we go through in which we have 5, 6, 7 guys in double figures?
Yeah, and it's not just how many guys we've had in double figures. How many guys have we, Josh, do you know how many different guys we've had actually lead the team in scoring so far this year? Is it 7 or 8?
We can come back to that.
We can come back to that. But the issue with Lee is
you got to give him more heads up than that. Josh, fastball, go.
I'm throwing him a bone for him to bring back to us later in the podcast. How about that?
Gotcha. Okay.
But Lee's issue is, I don't think that he's alone in that assessment. I don't think he's the only player in the league that thinks that way. And part of the beauty of the Spurs organization is the way they're able to make the absolute most out of every asset they have at their disposal.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, no, I couldn't agree
about
more.
Being able to maximize the talents of anybody in the game, whether it be Antonio McDice, who has a good ability to defend. He's got the nice tip in against the Lakers. He can rebound. But basically, he's an awesome jump shooter. A guy who, over the past 5 years, has the highest field goal percentage in the league on long two-point shots.
Right.
And maximize that to the point where he virtually never has to take that shot with his man on him.
Yeah.
His man rotates off to somebody else in order to stop a drive. The ball comes back to him. He's wide open. He shoots it. He shoots it at about 545. 54.5% of the time it goes in. That's awesome. And that's just an example of the way that any talent they have on the team, they make awesome use of it. Whereas if somebody's looking, just a glancing at the Spurs and see Antonio McDice, and oh, I'm going to be guarding him. Oh, I can get a hand in his face. That's not a problem. I'll make sure he shoots that shot at a lot less high rate than what he normally does.
Let me jump in here.
He's nowhere near him when he takes it.
You're right. Let me make a comment kind of slightly off subject about McDice, because I've been thinking about this throughout this last month. Any Spurs fans that are listening to this podcast right now, if you plan on going to a game anytime soon, I implore you, I challenge you, I encourage you, I need you to do us a favor. Go down to the HEB, go grab some poster board, grab some markers or some paint, make some signs that beg Antonio to come back next year, because he's kind of made some veiled comments that he's thinking about it. You know, he could see himself coming back. We need the entire arena full of poster boards begging Antonio to come back, because I don't want to see him retire after this year. I don't want to see him hanging up. I want to see more Antonio McDice, and it would be nice, I think, if we just kind of turned up the heat a little bit on Dice.
That would be awesome. That'd be great. I just want to make sure I understand. You've implored, challenged, and encouraged all the Spurs fans.
Whatever needs to be done. I just would like to see a game on TV in which the camera cannot get a. If we can get the camera off Reggie Miller's face for a second, or you know his sister, and we can show maybe some poster boards within the arena that just beg Antonio to come back. Maybe he'll. I don't know, maybe guilt him into coming back. I don't know what it would take. I want to see him back in silver and black next year.
Awesome.
I can see.
Go ahead, Josh.
I was going to say, I can see JRW running the baseline of the next game with a huge Antonio McDice head on a stick like they do at the New Orleans games.
Well, that's why I implored, because I knew that would appeal to JRW is the imploration.
That's great. I think instead we could just say that the gauntlet has been thrown down in front of Jane Ann and her and the other two members of the Three Musketeers.
Janie Ann, please, for 12 seconds, just set your camera down. Raise up a sign that says, Antonio, for the love of God, come back. Just that's all I'm asking, because we got to have Antonio back. Because I'll tell you something right now. If Splitters play this year is any indication of what it's going to be like next year, I will do everything I can to help pay for Antonio's salary just to get him back.
Wow, that's fantastic. That
you heard me say it. I'm not going to say it with Josh on the line either, just because I don't want to hurt Josh's feelings. I'm not turning my back on Splitter. I am a little tired of everybody. Oh, why is Splitter playing? Why is he not playing? Why can't he get more playing time? Well, guys, because he's not very good. It's real simple. And I would, while we're making challenges, while we're making, you know, imploring people to do things, I implore Tiago Splitter this offseason to go into a Krispy Kreme and just order everything and eat it all that day, and then go to the gym and lift weights and do that every single day this offseason.
Wow.
I can see it.
I'm done. That was my rant.
We practice now, yes?
So I guess this would be a good time to transition into the fun bit of the fifth tonight, which I'm going to take on and just say I see a dynamic going on with the team, and it's a lot like the way that pets start to look like their owners, or the way that a married couple after 25, 30, 40 years, they start to look like each other. I think the entire team is now starting to look like Duncan and kind of taking on that Groundhog Day kind of thing. The way that they're playing through three quarters and letting the team hang around for a while and then just putting them away in the fourth, and the way it's happening over and over and over, it's essentially like the team is a Groundhog Day team at this point.
I would agree with you. I don't think it's fun. I think that's dead on. I think you're right on target. I don't think Pop's happy with it. I think Pop he'd like to see us put away teams in the first or in the second rather than wait until the fourth. And I think that complacency is really going to be our biggest challenge. That and health. I don't like this third fifth of Spur. My biggest unhappiness has been Manu's play. He had a significant drop off, and I'd like to see that come back, maybe with some more rest.
Yeah.
I'd like to see the complacency leave. I'd like to see us really start putting teams away and getting that point differential. You know, the points scored against versus points scored up a little bit higher. We're second in the league right now to Miami. We're about half a percentage point behind Miami in points it takes to put people away. I think we're scoring 7.3 points a game more than our opponent. But that ground on day mentality, you're dead on, and I want to see it go away. I want to see that killer instinct in the first, yeah, not in the last 5 minutes of the fourth.
If only there was a game that had recently happened in this fifth of Spurs that we could talk about where they just jumped on a team in the first. But maybe in the next fifth of Spurs we'll be able to talk.
Well, I'll throw that right back at you. If there was a game that happened just outside of the third fifth in mm-hmm. which we absolutely got owned the entire game and set, oh, I don't know, maybe our lowest point total of the season against a far inferior team on the East Coast, that might be worth talking about as well. Unfortunately, we can't go there.
Mm. Josh, did you have something to add here real fast?
Well, I was going to say that I don't know if anybody is complacent in the Spurs staff or on the roster, because I think Pop said after the Detroit game, the one we won, 100-89, that the first thing he mentioned was that how unimpressed he was with our defense. So I what I'm trying to say is I think that Pop is trying to keep that mentality of, okay, we're good, but we're not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Just making sure that complacency doesn't come in at all. Yeah. Now, absolutely, if there's anybody dedicated to making sure that horrible, horrible word complacency can't be attached to the Spurs, then it would definitely be popping the staff. Last thing, I think I've gotten to the point where I'm giving away a gold star for every fifth so far, and the player that earned it, in my eyes, this past fifth is Dwan Blair. I got to give a shout out to Spurs fan Steve for bringing the stats for this portion of the podcast. In November, Blair was averaging 6 points and 6.5 rebounds a contest. December, 8.3 points and 6.3 rebounds. In January, 9.1 points, 7.8 rebounds a game. In February, well, we only have a little bit of February, but 15.2 points and 10.2 rebounds. And something tells me that after the fifth of Spurs into the fourth fifth of the season, that those numbers might be getting even better. And I'm just so excited about the way that he's playing, the confidence, the freewheeling nature of just the way that he just lets loose, and it's a joy to watch. It's awesome. And he hasn't slam dunked and fallen on his keister even once so far this season. That's great.
Yeah, that pun makes me LOL. Dwan is Dwan's playing well. That's all you can say. He's lights out. Keep it up, Dwan.
Awesome. Well, that is all we've got here today. Unless Josh, you have anything to add at the end?
No.
Well, thanks for joining us and being our Paul Schaefer to my David Letterman and Seth's. Steve Martin, what you want? Who you want to be?
Know.
Robin Williams?
I don't care. Just let the credits roll. Godfather 3.
Thanks a lot, guys, for joining us, and see you online. Would that help?
No, you need genuine whiskey. You need rum.
Huh, rum.
You need some good rum.